Hello, I'm Lino Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the show today, we'll take a look at the COVID-19 pandemic. The World Health Organization says many African countries have yet to vaccinate 1% of their populations against COVID-19 as outbreaks intensify across the continent. This, while wealthier countries who have immunized their most vulnerable citizens, stockpile jabs to prepare for the possibility of a third round of vaccinations. The WHO says Africa simply doesn't have the means to buy sufficient COVID-19 shots fast enough, and many thousands of lives are being lost because of this so-called vaccine inequity. Darren Taylor has more.
The epidemiologist in charge of South Africa's scientific response to the pandemic, Barry Shube, says there are good reasons to give a third vaccine dose to people with weaker immune systems.
So this would be people with undercurrent illnesses or people on various treatments for cancer, for example, illnesses such as HIV and so on, where they're not responding as well to the normal two doses of Pfizer, for example. So a booster dose is being considered to actually, again, stimulate the immune system to get an immune response.
But like the WHO, many scientists believe it's in the world's best interests to make sure all vulnerable people around the globe have received at least one jab before any move is made toward third shots. They say it may be morally questionable for richer countries to buy millions of doses while poorer regions, such as Africa, struggle for supplies. But such stockpiling has a scientific basis.
These are excellent vaccines. Let's make no mistake about it. They've radically reduced severe disease, which really is the main aim at this stage of vaccination. So they're very good vaccines. But on the other hand, they're not as good as, for example, measles vaccine is one example, or polio, or any of those vaccines, which give very long-lasting, sometimes even lifelong immunity.
Shube says it's impossible to say how long the available vaccines will protect against serious COVID-19.
But eventually we feel that that immunity is going to decay. Now, at this stage, it's too early to know how frequently we're going to need boosters in healthy individuals. It may be annually, maybe every 2 years, every 5 years. We don't know at this stage. I think we can be pretty confident that we will need boosters at a future time.
He says, again, wealthier nations are buying all the different vaccines available based on current scientific knowledge.
There has been some evidence of some mixing of vaccines, which does have an advantage. Now, whether it's going to be that or whether the vaccines will need to be tweaked, I think they will need to be tweaked. Remember, we're only now in our first generation of vaccines. There will be improvements of vaccines as the science of vaccines develops.
Health activists say these improvements will result in richer countries dumping their original vaccines on Africa in the future. Shube says the world's also going to need a lot more different vaccines because COVID-19's constantly mutating and throwing up new variants, making it unlikely for populations to ever achieve so-called herd immunity.
These variants occur in individuals who don't respond that well and where the virus continues to multiply. And as the virus multiplies, it's got more chance of being selected to escape the immunity. So it's not going to be that the population's immune. That's really the way that we have to deal with the virus, to stop it multiplying in individuals and to get as many people immunized as quickly as possible. That's really the aim.
Right now, says the WHO, that's far from being achieved in Africa, where life-saving vaccines remain rare. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Health experts are warning African countries to prepare for the next COVID vaccine rollouts with more dosing sites and cold storage so none go to waste. Malawi is expected in August to receive about 300,000 doses, each of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as well as the Pfizer one, which requires ultra-cold storage. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, some donated vaccines are being received just a few months before they expire.
Malawi expects to receive more than 600,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccine soon. In May, the country had to discard 20,000 doses due to a lack of demand. But officials say that when the new vaccine arrives, demand will be high and Malawi will be prepared, as Lameck Masina reports from Blanta. Over the next 2 months, Malawi is expected to receive about 372,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine and about 300,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Experts are warning the country needs to be ready to store and distribute it. In May, authorities banned about 20,000 expired doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine that went unused due to a shortage of distribution centers and widespread vaccine hesitancy, the latter caused by myths and misinformation about their safety. Queen Duwe is the chief of health services in Malawi's Ministry of Health. She says there will be no repeat of that incident because a government campaign has now convinced Malawians the vaccines are safe and protected. She notes that a recent consignment of 192,000 AstraZeneca vaccines, which the country received last Saturday, were gone within days. Even if some of the donated vaccines are due to expire soon, they will be distributed within sufficient time, she says.
It's these scenarios where you have 1 week shelf life left that then puts you in very difficult circumstances. But, you know, so we've created the demand. Remember, on the 27th, we vaccinated 75,000 people. And so even if we had all those doses that were to expire within 2 weeks, say, for example, 100,000 doses, we should be able to quickly use them within 2-3 days.
Dr. Alinafe Garcia is a public health expert with Village Reach, an international health charity that is supporting vaccine delivery in African countries. He says countries need to think about their storage and distribution systems.
That means a number of things. Do we have enough capacity to be able to store the vaccines that are coming? I mean, some of these vaccines, you know, might have different cold chain requirements, but also do we have a logistics system in place to be able to move these vaccines around? Do we have enough people trained? Are we opening up enough sites? Are we looking at, you know, doing more to create demand?
Garcia, the country director for Village Reach in Malawi, applauds Malawi's government for creating demand for the vaccine. Queen Duwe says even though the Pfizer vaccine needs at record storage, no doses will be wasted.
So there are two things with Pfizer. So we now have evidence that if you take it out of the at record system, you can store it at temperatures between 2 to 8 degrees. These are the normal temperatures that we store our normal vaccines in, and you can use it for 31 days.
So far, Malawi has recorded about 51,000 cases of COVID-19 and nearly 1,600 deaths. Only a tiny fraction of the country's 18 million people have been inoculated, though that number will quickly rise if more people cooperate with the government's vaccination campaign. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Global inequality in the distribution of vaccines continues to hamper efforts to end the pandemic worldwide. But for those able to travel to wealthier countries with an abundance of vaccines, they are now willing to travel the distance and bear the high cost of vaccine tourism. VOA's Virginia Gunawan explains.
As health workers in the U.S. struggle to give COVID vaccines to Americans who are hesitant or even resistant, others around the world are not only willing to get vaccinated, but making the extra effort to do so. Suli Razak flew halfway around the world from Indonesia.
My children go to college here. After some consideration, we decided to get the vaccine in the U.S. while visiting our children.
Like many countries around the world, vaccine rollout has struggled to catch up with demand in Indonesia, currently experiencing a spike in COVID cases, including the more infectious Delta variant. So in June, along with her husband and 16-year-old daughter, Suli Razak boarded a 21-hour flight from Jakarta to New York. 2 days later, they got their first Pfizer shot at the local pharmacy in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania.
Before coming here, we've got some information saying that it was easy to get vaccinated. Turns out it was really easy.
Meanwhile, Anki Bangaditya, visiting New York City from Jakarta in March, managed to get the one-shot vaccine, Johnson & Johnson, just a couple days before heading back to Indonesia. The city had opened vaccinations to non-residents as part of attempts to boost tourism.
I wasn't sure I was going to immediately get it. I kept having to refresh the page for the appointment. It took 3 to 4 days to get a vaccination appointment.
At least 24 U.S. states do not require proof of residency for COVID-19 vaccination. For travel agents in Indonesia, this has become an opportunity to revive their businesses, hit hard by the pandemic. They are offering tour packages to get vaccinated in the U.S.
We have more than 30 people lining up.
The tour packages range from a $550 deal, a four-day trip to Hawaii, to the luxurious 52-day cross-country trip costing $3,600. The availability of so many vaccines in the U.S. with a higher efficacy rate than the Chinese-produced vaccines primarily used in Indonesia is one draw for vaccine tourism.
The vaccine approved in such countries are like Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. We don't have those in Indonesia yet. So I thought to myself, why not travel and get vaccinated at the same time?
Vaccine tourism also faces ethical concerns regarding access.
That does create disparities because the same people, same group of people from the country, some may be able to afford to do that while others would not be able to.
So far, the WHO Global Vaccine Sharing Program, COVAX, has shipped out at least 105 million doses to 135 lower to middle-income countries. The anti-poverty advocacy group One Campaign notes that only 1% of COVID vaccines worldwide have gone to lower-income countries and have called on industrialized countries to hasten vaccine sharing with the rest of the world. In Washington, D.C., Virginia Gunawan, VOA News.
Vaccination programs against some of the world's deadliest diseases have saved millions of lives over the past 20 years, according to researchers. But continuing progress is threatened by the COVID-19 pandemic, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
An emergency vaccination drive in the Democratic Republic of Congo after a measles outbreak in 2020. Efforts like this have saved millions of lives, says a study. Researchers looked at vaccination programs over the past two decades, targeting 10 infectious diseases across 112 low- and middle-income countries. They found that some 50 million lives, mostly those of children, had been saved by vaccines. They included diseases such as measles, hepatitis B, human papillomavirus or HPV, and yellow fever. The research was led by the Vaccine Impact Modelling Consortium, funded by Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Dr. Katie Gaythorpe of Imperial College London is one of the report's authors.
If we continued with the vaccinations in our projections, so beyond 2019, we'd avert another 47 million deaths. So huge numbers, and really wanted... What we wanted to kind of show in this paper is this is what we projected vaccination to look like before the COVID pandemic, and wanted to emphasize, you know, these long-term effects, these long-term benefits of vaccination going into the future.
Immunization programs have added benefits beyond the prevention of specific diseases. Again, Dr. Katie Gaythorpe.
For example, if people aren't getting sick of vaccine-preventable diseases, then that means there's less stress on healthcare due to those infections, which means you could potentially be treating people for other things.
But the researchers warn that the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted vaccination programs and could lead to a decline in coverage. Again, Dr. Katie Gaythorpe.
We've got not only healthcare services stretched by possibly treating people infected with COVID. We've also got people's personal choice. You know, they might put off going to seek an immunization just because of fears surrounding being infected with COVID.
The World Health Organization in April launched its Immunization Agenda 2030 to try to get vaccine programs back on track and reach even more people. Kate O'Brien is the WHO's Vaccines Department Chief.
It would mean reducing by half the children who are completely left out of essential vaccines, the zero-dose children. It would mean achieving another 500 introductions of new and underused vaccines in low- and middle-income countries.
Scientists say the huge number of lives saved demonstrates the stunning advances of modern medicine and the importance of keeping other vaccine programs on track despite the COVID pandemic. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. South Africa has received the first batch of almost 6 million COVID-19 vaccine doses donated by the United States. The consignment arrived Saturday, just as the African country so far worst affected by the pandemic was running out of jabs. Coronavirus has claimed the lives of more than 72,000 people in South Africa and infected almost 2.5 million. Darren Taylor reports that fatalities continue to spike in several regions.
So far, 7 million people in South Africa have received at least a single dose of vaccine, still well short of its target of 40 million of the 60 million population. Infectious diseases specialist Shabir Mahdi says both the Pfizer and the Johnson & Johnson jabs, the vaccines being rolled out in South Africa, offer a high degree of protection against serious COVID-19 2 to 3 weeks after being given. But he says it's disappointing that not enough elderly people have been immunized.
Currently, the figure stands at about 65% of people above the age of 60 having been vaccinated. So 1/3 of them have not as yet been vaccinated, which is a problem because they make up close to 50% of all of the people that die of COVID-19 in South Africa.
Another reason for climbing death rates, says Mahdi, is that people with illnesses that increase their risk of getting serious COVID-19 aren't being pushed to the front of the vaccination queue.
We need to make a concerted effort to ensure that those that do have underlying medical conditions and people above the age of 60, we get a first dose into their arms as quickly as possible, and we want at least 90% of those individuals to be vaccinated before we're going to see some significant impact with the vaccines reducing death and hospitalization.
Another reason for climbing death rates, says Mahdi, is that people with illnesses that increase their risk of getting serious COVID-19 aren't being pushed to the front of the vaccination queue.
The reason we're seeing young people die this time around and ending up in hospital is just a function of the much larger number of people that are actually being affected in this particular wave, compared with the number of young people that were infected in previous waves, simply because this variant, unfortunately, is much, much more transmissible, and it's much easier to be infected if in an environment where the virus is circulating.
Mahdi says the U.S. government's shipment of vaccines has arrived too late to ease South Africa's third outbreak, but should lessen the impact of the fourth resurgence expected in 3 to 4 months. He adds it's disturbing that despite the many deaths from COVID-19 in the country so far, some citizens continue to voice doubts about the jabs.
The core message to them is that the toss-up is between getting vaccinated and protected against COVID-19, despite there being a relatively very small risk of side effects, or remaining unprotected and actually dying of COVID-19. So you've got the choice to make, and that is especially if you're in that group of individuals that is at risk of developing severe disease. For me, the mathematics, the equation behind it is quite simple. The benefits of taking a chance with a vaccine which you might have some doubts about, which I don't have any doubts about, far exceeds any sort of risk that you might have in mind.
The government's resisting public pressure to make COVID-19 vaccinations compulsory because they otherwise put others at risk. But the administration of President Cyril Ramaphosa maintains it's every individual's right to decide whether to be immunized. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The number of known deaths from COVID-19 has passed 4 million, according to Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking both cases and death. In the past 100 years, there have been flu and cholera epidemics, the AIDS epidemic, and multiple other diseases around the world. VOA's Carol Pearson says the latest research shows many epidemics either don't have to happen or can be contained.
As some countries prepare for yet another wave of the coronavirus, doctors in countries with a surplus of vaccines are begging people to get vaccinated.
I'm Dr. Michael Boulding. I've been working our COVID unit for the last 16 months. I get asked on a daily basis now what our COVID unit looks like.
Boulding says he is now seeing very sick, unvaccinated patients in their 20s and 30s.
With no comorbid conditions, ending up on ventilators, BiPAP, high-flow oxygen, and extremely sick, sicker than at any time during this pandemic.
With a vaccine, severe illness and death from COVID-19 can be avoided.
We're calling for a global goal of 717. 7 days to detect an outbreak, 1 day to notify an outbreak, and 7 days to mount an effective response.
VOA interviewed Amanda McClelland at a summit on disease prevention and control. She says it's possible to prevent epidemics and cites Uganda as an example. Uganda stopped a recent Ebola outbreak at its border with the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Uganda responded to the risk and mobilized their communities, mobilized their health systems to strengthen surveillance along the border and was able to detect Ebola cases and care for those patients effectively. And they didn't have an Ebola outbreak.
In fact, a study released in April by Resolve to Save Lives that's called Epidemics That Didn't Happen included multiple examples of situations where countries avoided or stopped epidemics. Here's another example. In 2014, Nigeria stopped an Ebola outbreak, and in 2016, Brazil prevented a yellow fever epidemic from taking hold. In both cases, health officials implemented coordinated response activities, effective communication, and dedicated leadership. McClellan says the key is good leadership and building trust at the community level.
You can't just come when something bad happens. You have to be there all of the time. You have to meet the communities where they are and address their everyday health needs, and that builds trust.
McClelland says trust, good journalism, and a strong civil society help communities push back against disinformation and politicizing diseases, vaccines, and treatments. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
We turn now to hunger and starvation. The United Nations warns global hunger is increasing and urgent action is needed to stave off famine and death over coming months in nearly 2,000 unstable, violence-prone countries. The warning is in a newly released report by the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Food Programme. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations warns global hunger is increasing and urgent action is needed to stave off famine and death over coming months in nearly 24 unstable, violence-prone countries. The warning is in a newly released report by the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Food Programme. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. The report from the WFP and FAO focuses on the particularly serious situation in 23 so-called hunger hotspots. Most of those countries are in sub-Saharan Africa, with others in Central America, Asia, and the Middle East. Patrick Jackson is Food and Agriculture Organization officer in charge of the Geneva office. He says acute hunger is set to increase in those countries over the next 4 months without urgent and scaled-up humanitarian assistance.
Conflict continues to be the primary driver for the largest share of people facing acute food insecurity. Weather extremes and climate variability are likely to affect several parts of the world during the outlook period.
The report says dry conditions are likely to affect Haiti, Nigeria's Middle Belt, and the Dry Corridor in Guatemala, while above-average rainfall and flooding is forecast in South Sudan, Central and Eastern Sahel, and Gulf of Guinea countries. The report highlights the perilous situation in Ethiopia and Madagascar, the world's newest highest alert hunger hotspots. Director of the World Food Program Geneva Office, Annalisa Conte, says the aggravation of conflict in recent months is having a catastrophic impact on the food security of the Tigrayan population in Ethiopia. She warns more than 400,000 people will face starvation if they do not receive sufficient humanitarian aid.
If we move to Madagascar is experiencing the worst drought in 40 years. On top of that, economic decline largely caused by COVID, and as a result, 1.3 million people are currently facing acute food insecurity.
The FAO and WFP say fighting blockades that cut off life-saving aid to families on the verge of famine and a lack of funding are hampering efforts to provide emergency food aid to millions of desperate people. They say families that rely on humanitarian aid to survive are hanging by a thread. They note most of those on the verge of famine in the 23 hotspots are farmers and must receive help to resume food production. That, they say, will allow them to feed themselves and become self-sufficient. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the World Food Programme say urgent action is needed to prevent more than 500,000 children living in southern Madagascar from becoming acutely malnourished. Mavis Okiri in Kwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
The situation was largely driven by four straight years of drought. Now, as the rainy season looms, the crisis is expected to drastically worsen as food stocks run low. Timothy James Owen, chief of communication at UNICEF Madagascar, says the situation has reached critical levels compared with previous years. He notes that access to safe water also is challenging, leaving children, families, and entire communities relying on potentially unsafe sources of water that could spawn waterborne diseases, increasing malnutrition levels.
So it really is a vicious cycle and one which requires urgent action on the part of the government of Madagascar and its partners such as UNICEF and WFP. There's many issues which are driving malnutrition amongst children. Obviously, one of them is a lack of access to adequate food and nutrition, and we need to ensure that families are able to adequately feed themselves, and I know our sister agency, WFP, is working on that.
Owen says acutely malnourished children were benefiting from a therapeutic feeding program that includes plumpy nuts rich in calories and nutrients. He says once a child is on such a program, the rate of success and a return to health again is more than 80%.
And we know that if we can treat a child and get them into this program, we can save lives. But amongst this 500,000 figure that we are alarmed by and that we are expected to see as we go into 2022 are some 110,000 children who are severely acutely malnourished. And what that means is they really are facing a life-threatening condition.
He says about 1.5 million people in southern Madagascar are food insecure, and nearly 50% of them suffer from lack of access to safe water, health care, and sanitation facilities. He says around 14,000 people in the Ambo Bomve district were classified as being in catastrophic conditions due to food insecurity, drought, and malnutrition.
They are cut off and where they are really quite desperate in search of water, which won't in turn make them sick. We use water trucking to bring in water to these communities. We have constructed a pipeline and we have recently extended that pipeline. And water is generally for sale in the marketplaces.
He says UNICEF the governments and the World Bank have provided cash transfers to families to help alleviate their plight. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochery in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.